Focus on Phocis. King Strophius of Phocis was poorly named. He was a simple, uncomplicated man with simple, uncomplicated ideas. His friends, and he had many, would have been more likely to describe him as solid as an oak than slippery as an eel. Strophius means turning, and was applied to twisters and slippery customers. Some 20 summers ago, Strophius had married Menelaus and Agamemnon's sister, Anaxibia. After a little while, the union produced a son, Prince Pylades, of whom they were fond and proud. It had been a disappointment when time revealed that Anaxibia would never bear any more progeny, but the gods had, in the most unlikely way, provided them with three much-loved foster children. 7 years ago, in Mycenae, Anaxibia's brother Agamemnon had been murdered by Clytemnestra and her lover Aegisthus. Before that unnatural monster could turn her attention to her own two children, Electra and Orestes, they had been spirited away by their nurse, Arsinoe, along with their younger sister, Chrysothemis. Aunt Anaxibia had been only too pleased to bring the children up as her own, and Strophius assented happily. "Company for Pylades," he had said. And how right he had been. The four cousins got on well with each other, but from the very first, Pylades and Orestes were inseparable. Each had now reached their 18th year, and Strophius was anxious for Pylades to complete his training in statecraft. Until this time, he and Orestes had always been taught together, but the particularities of the kingdom of Phocis meant that Pylades' tutelage from now on would have to be undertaken on his own. Orestes was the rightful heir to a kingdom too, but back in Mycenae, the adulterous union of Aegisthus and Clytemnestra had borne fruit in the form of a daughter, Erigone, and a son, Aletes, who was being raised as the next king. That Pylades' future should be so assured and Orestes so uncertain was an unspoken source of unease. "We have a month to go before I start my lessons," Pylades said, as he, Orestes and Electra sat by the fountain in the inner courtyard of the Phocian palace. "The festival of Demeter is coming up. What shall we do?" "I promised Arsinoe and Menander that I would pay them a visit," said Electra. "You should come too, Orestes. They always ask after you."
"Ah," said Orestes, "the seal and I are going on a hunt. I'll give you a present for him and a poem for her."
Orestes liked to call Pylades the seal. The reasons were complicated. Pylades' great-great-grandmother, Psamathe, a Nereid, had turned herself into a seal to evade the attentions of Aeacus, king of Aegina. Aeacus had taken her anyway, and she had borne a son, Phocus. Phocus's son, Chrysus, begat Strophius, Pylades' father. As far as Orestes was concerned, therefore, Pylades was as much seal as human. Electra sighed. Boys were unreliable when it came to their obligations. She left the next day, and after her brother and cousin had waved her goodbye, they mounted their horses and headed for the eastern hills. This was no formal hunt, and they took no one with them, not so much as a single groom or attendant. They liked to be alone together. Pylades and Orestes were extraordinarily in love, to the amusement of Strophius and Anaxibia, who likened them to Patroclus and Achilles, to whom, of course, they were related. Pylades' line descended from Aegina, grandmother of both Phocus and Peleus, Achilles' father. But Aegina was also mother of Menoetius, Patroclus's father. I don't recommend thinking too hard about these relationships. They do a person's head in. Such close companionships were common and blessed by the gods. The time would come when each would have to think about marriage and children, but for the moment, their passionate fondness, each for the other, was a source of delight and envy all around the kingdom. Parnassus said Pylades, pointing to the far blue hills to the east.
I have another idea, said Orestes. Follow me, see if you can guess. It took Pylades an hour of riding to realize their destination.
Delphi? You're heading for Delphi?
Might as well see what the future has in store.
They rode on in silence. Pylades could understand why his friend, who had suffered the almost unimaginable horror of seeing his mother murder his father, might want to know what the future held for him. But Pylades knew, as did the whole world, that the clan of Tantalus was triple cursed. Tantalus himself is eternally tormented in the underworld, surrounded by water that recedes when he stoops to drink. Luscious fruit hangs above him just out of reach, hence our word tantalize. Tantalus's descendants, Pelops, Atreus, and Agamemnon, were all victims and perpetrators of nameless atrocities, curse piling upon curse like Pelion on Ossa. For details of the heaping of one of these two mountains on the other, see Mythos. Suppose the oracle at Delphi had only terrible news for the next generation. Whatever the proclamation or prophecy, Pylades would support his lover, to the uttermost. The queue outside the oracle was a long one that day. Fruit sellers moved up and down the line. Now, have you handsome, generous, beautifully dressed young gentlemen ever seen figs as good as these? Said a sycophant, offering up his pelanos, the cake of figs that formed part of the payment owed to the oracle. The word sycophant literally means one who shows figs. Orestes bought the pelanos. Now sellers of lambs and kids approached. Before entering the oracle, it was necessary to make a sacrificial offering. The offering was made, and at last it was Orestes' turn. He beckoned Pylades to follow him into the cavern-like interior.
"One at a time," cried a male voice from the darkness within. "Only one may... Ah, no, you are seen. You are a pair, and you may enter as a pair. Come forward."
Arms around each other, they edged nervously towards the voice. As their eyes grew accustomed to the dark, elements began to emerge. Pylades could make out the veiled figure of the Pythia, Apollo's priestess, seated on her golden tripod. They knew that they could not address her directly, only through the priest, whose hand was outstretched. Orestes paid him the fee of 2 obols and handed over the pelanos. The sulphurous air made Orestes cough. Eyes streaming, he spoke out as best he could.
"I am Orestes, son of the king of men Agamemnon, son of Atreus, son of Pelops, son of Tantalus, son of great father Zeus."
"We know who you are. What would you with us? Speak."
I want to know how to reclaim the throne stolen from my father."
"Every day that King Aegisthus and Queen Clytemnestra rule in Mycenae is an affront to the gods. The blood crime must be avenged. The abominable murder of Agamemnon must be avenged. And you, Prince Orestes, must be the avenger."
I understand. But must I kill my mother as well as—"
"We have answered. Leave us.
But
go!"
They rode away at a gallop. When Delphi was far enough behind, they slowed their pace.
"I hope you don't think I'm going to let you do this on your own," said Pylades.
"What do you mean?"
"If you were planning to go to Mycenae, then I'm coming with you."
"But you're schooling. You have all those lessons ahead of you. Land management, legal documentation, livestock breeding."
Anyway, that can be put off for a year or more. My father will understand." But it might be dangerous, Seal. It will be dangerous.
All the more reason not to let you go alone. It's not a subject for debate. I'm coming with you. That is that.